We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Checking up on the Braves, Falcons, Hawks, and Atlanta United.
Listen up.
Let's go around the 404 with Rick and John.
What we do at high noon every day, ladies and gentlemen, around the 404. As Rick and John come to you live from Flowery Branch at Falcons headquarters. 1:30, the doors open, and 2:30, the practice will get underway here. Day two of mandatory minicamp, and looks like the sun is starting to come out a little bit here, John.
Yes,
we have not had any rain out here. A light sprinkle as we all arrived at about 9:15, whatever it was. But nevertheless, the practice will be going on out here. And we know who's not going to be here. But, John, as we said at the top of the show, we're focusing today on who's going to be here.
Preacher Man was looking at the Doppler radar right now. He's got a second job as the weather influencer here at 92.9 The Game. And, Preacher Man, how's the weather looking?
What?
What'd you call him, Mark?
That wasn't nice at all.
It was.
All right, just for our edification. The weather for us looks good. It's showing no signs of precipitation between now and 4 o'clock. However, at 4 o'clock, it starts at 30% and keeps going up through the rest of the evening.
So you're saying it may be wet for Dukes and Bell out here?
Quite possibly.
But by the time we leave at 2 and go out and watch practice, it'll be nice and dry and pretty and all that good stuff.
Will they move practice indoors if it gets too wet out here?
They'll just cut it short. If it starts monsooning at 4, they'll be like, the air horn will go, and that'll be the end.
So let's hear from Dan Quinn, man. MO's got some cuts back in the Kia studios. DQ addressing the media yesterday. We have heard some of his bites talking about the absence of Julio Jones, but he talked about other topics as well.
But let's start with this one, MO. He talked about Julio being a hell of a teammate. Julio Jones being a hell of a teammate.
Do we want everybody here all the time? Like, hell yeah, like all the time. Like, that's what's so much fun about being part of a team. But I'd say if you ask to a man, the guy's a hell of a teammate. And his time spent here, the way he mentors people, how hard he plays, there is plenty of brotherhood in Julio.
So yesterday we were talking about brotherhood and, you know, has Julio debunked brotherhood? Dan Quinn right there saying there's a lot of brotherhood in Julio Jones.
I want to get shady, and I'm not going to get shady. I'm sorry, folks. If you're like, this is the insert Kamla shadiness here, I'm just not in the mood today. I'm really not. Yesterday, I think we all got it out of our systems. But you heard what Dan Quinn at the top of that bite. Do we want everybody here all the time? Hell yeah.
Yeah.
And so, again, it just goes back to how disappointed he is that Julio is not here. And he is not going to say it with hot sauce. He's not. He doesn't want NFL Network running with it. He doesn't want, you know what I'm saying? He's just trying to keep the peace, just trying to keep everything kosher. Everything's fine. There's nothing to see here. But you can tell in him saying that, John, that he's disappointed that Julio Jones is not here. He had an expectation that Julio would be here. Julio Jones has not met that expectation. When your parents or your bosses have expectations for you and you fall short, they get disappointed. And none of us ever want that to be the case.
Like, I am expected tomorrow to go to V103 Soul Session, which I am going to go to happily. You know, I talked to Reggie Rouse downstairs, talked to Sean Thompson. If I didn't show, guess what? They would be disappointed because their expectation is for me and Hugh Douglas and some others to come waltzing through the door, shake hands, kiss babies, do all that good stuff. Dan Quinn's disappointed, but he's not going to go over the top yet. Here's the thing that stinks about all this and what we were talking about some yesterday. This is now a lingering conversation until it's no longer a lingering conversation. Until Julio Jones pulls up in the Fisker Karma or whatever car he's driving, maybe a new Kia Stinger because he's got the Kia dealership out there in Tuscaloosa. Until he comes through the door and he walks in and you've got social media taking pictures of him, it's going to be a story. And that's something, unfortunately, that like the clouds that are out here in Flowery Branch, it's just going to linger around this building until Julio walks through the door.
No doubt about it, man. It's around the 404 with your boys Rick and John live from Flowery Branch. Let's hear some more from DQ.
Here's DQ talking about the effects of Julio not being here.
Yeah, it's always good when you get everybody together. The good news is that I know that he and Matt get chances to work together, and not just with him, but with the other receivers as well. So I know that's taking place now and this summer. So that's something that they always do and will continue to do this summer as well.
So he said it's taking place now. Well, it's not taking place here at Flowery Branch, maybe somewhere off the field, and it will take place this summer.
Well, here's the thing, though. It hasn't been reported.
No, it hasn't been.
So I don't know what to make of that soundbite. We follow every breath, every fart, every thought of this team. We do. Every single movement of this team we follow on a daily basis. What else do we have to do? We're all about football here in the South. We follow everything. So when did they work together?
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know.
Was it in March? Was it in April? Was it last week? It wasn't last week because Matt Ryan was here working at voluntary OTAs. So I don't know what to make of that quote.
Will it happen during the summer? We've heard that Matt Ryan will take the group out to L.A. Instead of the Miami trip, there was going to be an L.A. trip of some sort. Julio out in L.A. right
Correct.
Now.
Correct. I don't think that's a coincidence, John.
Yeah, does Matt end up going out there to hang with Julio and get some work?
But if Julio's holding out, why would he join a sort of unofficial team activity?
Because it has nothing to do with the team. That is the players themselves. It's not like Marquand Manuel or Raheem Morris or anybody's traveling with them. Mm-hmm. That's much like the Miami trip a year ago and 2 years ago. Guys are going to go off and do their own thing.
Okay, great point. Because it's not a team-organized activity. And, of course, Julio's trying to send a statement to the team about his discontent with his contract by not coming to these team-organized activities. But if this is a brotherhood event,
right,
and Julio does not attend, oh, boy, we got problems then. Oh, boy.
Here's some more from Dan Quinn talking about how football and business continue to intersect.
Sometimes football and business intersect, and that's okay, and that happens a lot. But as far as details with it, I'm going to choose to keep the conversations from a player side and my side. Between us, I know you're looking for the answers on that, but I just don't have any to share with you.
I mean, he's put in a tough spot.
He is.
DQ's salty about him not being here. Doesn't want to come off as too salty. And he can't talk about the nitty-gritty of, are you going to fine him? Are you going to follow through with the fine?
Right.
Julio's camp and Dimitroff and his side, you know, exchanging, you know, proposals for new. He just can't get into all that, John. He just can't. So don't be mad at him.
He can't and he won't. And, again, this is how this organization operates. I've been around here doing sidelines. This will be my eighth year, but covering the team in this city for almost 15. They've always kept their business close to the vest. They're going to hold the situation close. They're not going to talk too much in the media. They're not going to make a spectacle out of themselves. And this is why it's been a really tight-knit organization for a long time. They never threw Mike Smith under the bus when they decided to let him go. It was very classy. It was very professional. They didn't throw Bobby Petrino under the bus when that little weasel came running out of town the way that he did. They've always kept it classy, and they're going to do the same with Julio. One last cut from DQ talking about Julio, and then he's got some other stuff. He talks about keeping these conversations private.
Stay
classy, guys know how I am in terms of conversations, staying private, and I don't have any answers for you today. And we're right in the middle of those conversations with Julio and the team. So when we do have answers, you'll certainly have some. But I know that's your job and you want them. But I just don't have any to share with you today. Much like most of the players, the conversations that we have, we keep private.
So we said conversations are ongoing. I can't imagine that the conversations are getting very far. I have a feeling it's Julio's camp barking, saying, you know, we need this, we need this, we need this. And it's Dimitroff and his side saying, we're not giving it to you because your timing sucks. Okay? So keep it moving. When are you showing up? You coming to training camp? We're all going to be here in brotherhood. Hashtag.
I got a feeling, though, they're going a little better than that. It's probably far apart, but there's conversation. It's not just, we're not doing this, goodbye. The Falcons understand how important Julio is. Julio understands he doesn't get a paycheck if he doesn't play week number one. And if you want more money, the last thing you want is no paycheck.
But we both agree that the Falcons aren't going to correct his contract, right?
I don't think so.
Okay,
that would be a different precedent for them to do so.
That's my prediction, is that it would be unprecedented for them to do that, and it would open up a can of worms that front office does not want to open up, even if it appeases your best player. Mm-hmm. My prediction is that, and I'm not even going to give you a prediction. I have no idea what's going to happen. I'll just tell you what I would do. I would enforce the fine on Julio Jones. I would call his bluff. He has zero leverage. And if he wants to hold out, then hold out. But all you would be doing is hurting yourself and the team at that point, and you would turn this town against you.
I'm going to make a prediction, and it's not what I would do personally. Me personally, it's just what you said. I'm not paying you. If you show up, you show up. If you don't, we're going to go on without you. And eventually the player's going to cave, because they always do.
They always do.
They're going to sit out maybe a game, maybe two, and then they go, dude, I don't have that check coming.
No, to your point, it'll get up to like Le'Veon Bell last year,
yep.
Up to about a week before the start of the
and
regular season, and he will arrive and drop his bags at the team facility. I hope it doesn't go that long, John.
I'm going to make a prediction. They are going to update the contract.
Okay.
I don't know when. The Falcons are – I don't think it's the right thing to do, but my prediction right now is somewhere between now and the time they play Philadelphia, there will be a restructure slash update to his deal, and it may end up meaning you're going to lose a player somewhere down the line. You may lose one of your young defensive players because you've paid more money to Julio Jones. Hey, here's Dan Quinn talking about guys that are out there and how he's encouraged by his rookie class.
And I think this class has a chance to be an excellent one. I hope you felt their speed and their intent. And as a class, I've been really encouraged about the work that they've put into this time.
It's all about the young guys at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like, it's not like Alex Mack needs to really, do a lot of stuff out here. I mean, get some reps, get workouts in and all that kind of stuff. But really, to me, this is about offense more than defense. And it's more about skill players and quarterback wide receiver relationships than anything else. Because the defense has to all be on a string. They got to all be fingers in a glove and all that kind of stuff. I'm not worried about that. But the Ryan to Julio thing, how Julio, Sanu, and Ridley fit in the passing tree, in the route tree with Ryan under center, that stuff is important to me, and that's why I'm disappointed Julio isn't here.
For me, and this time of the year is more about installation and understanding where you're supposed to be and what the counter moves are off of every original move. That's why it is more about the rookies. Veterans come out here and they go, all right, I got 3 days of practice. I'm just trying not to get hurt, and I'm trying to get on to the summer because I've got my last couple of weeks off before we report back to training camp, and then it's the end. Then it's literally you're on the grind from now, hopefully until February, when you play in a Super Bowl. That's what the veterans understand. There's going to be some nuances brought up, but even with somebody like Julio not being here, it's not like Steve Sarkisian goes, hey, you're not getting the playbook. He's already got it downloaded on his iPad. He knows what they're looking for. Matt and Julio have worked together enough in 8 years where they know kind of what the route's going to be, how his depth's going to be, how he comes out of each one of these breaks. But to go back to the rookie class, the videos that they've put out of Calvin Ridley, he looks like he is an absolute jet. Now, again, it's shorts and T-shirt and a helmet. He doesn't have pads on. He's not getting popped. He's not trying to come off a jam. But they look like the guy right now, Calvin Ridley, is a steal in the first round.
Oh, no doubt about it. And we said that on draft night. He should have been a mid-first-round pick, not a late first-round pick. And then we go ahead and get a guy with a first-round grade in the second round in Isaiah Oliver. And Dan Quinn has said that this draft class has a chance to be really, really good. I totally believe that. But go to my personal Twitter account after you go to at 92.9 The Game and at Rick and John 929. I retweeted that video of Calvin Ridley yesterday, and he's in shorts, mm-hmm. and he's not playing against defenders. But boy, does he look fast.
You know who made a great catch yesterday, and it's up on at Falcons? Eric Saubert. Nice one-handed.
Who?
Eric Saubert.
Who?
Tight end.
That's oh, it. That guy. Yeah, fifth-round pick last year?
Not Mike Jones, but Eric Saubert.
We're going to get something out of him this year?
I mean, I hope so.
So the fact that our Falcons did not make a move in the draft to get a tight end, the fact that they didn't make a free agent move to get a tight end, of course, Logan Paulson was brought in. That's a small low-dough move. That tells me they think they're going to get something out of Eric Saubert, not just on special teams, but on offense this year. It's year two. Hopefully he the player out of Drake can get it going and produce and help the cause.
Hey, let's plug Vision Computers right now with our Vision Computers Twitter poll. Vision Computers, where if you need help with tech support, it's less than 15 seconds away. Emo, what do you got cooked up back there that's on at Rick and John 929?
All right, a little bit earlier in the show, you guys detailed your top 10 NFL quarterbacks. So you ranked all top 10 quarterbacks. And if you want to hear the entire conversation, it's a good one, go to 929thegame.com. So we asked you guys, we each listed out your top five. Rick's top five, Drew Brees, Ben Roethlisberger, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, and Tom Brady. John's top five, Russell Wilson, Matt Ryan, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, and also Tom Brady and number one. So our question for you guys at Rick and John 929, did they get it right? Do you like their rankings? Are you impressed with that? your options are, yeah, I 100% agree. Good job, guys. Or do you think that Rick's right? Do you think that John's right? Or both of you are a couple of knuckleheads and you don't know what the hell you're talking about. So right now,
I'm going with a couple of knuckleheads.
54% of the votes coming in say that John's right on this one. 19% saying that Rick's right with his quarterback rankings. 7% completely agree with both of you. And 20% think you're both way off on these. And you can hear the entire conversation at 9onthegame.com.
Hey, elsewhere tonight as we go around the 404, it is going to be Atlanta United and the Columbus Crew. This is the team that put Atlanta United out of the playoffs a year ago. Mike Conti, Jason Longshore will be on the call. We'll talk to Jason Longshore coming up at 1 o'clock. I presume they're already in Columbus, or, yeah, they're up there already. Preacher Man's giving me the yes. Not a lot to do there. Just go to the stadium and just chill.
I've been around this country 10 times and back. I've never been to Columbus. I've never had a desire. I've never had a work need that has taken me to Columbus, so I've never been there.
So you've never been to a game at the Horseshoe?
I have not.
It's actually pretty cool. I can't knock that.
That'd be a bucket list thing for sure. When we talk to Jason Longshore an hour from now, as we do Wednesday at 1 every week, we got to know about Miggy Almiron. And I just checked online, and the last update on him was 2 days ago, that he's questionable for tonight's match with a shoulder injury. I don't know if anybody around here has any intel that's more fresh than that, but we know McCann's not going to go. Bijalba, last I read, was questionable. Miggy is questionable. If we don't have Miguel Almiron tonight, I mean, I'll cheer for it. I want us to win. I don't really like our chances if we don't have Almiron tonight.
Well, I like your chances if you're an Atlanta United supporter to hang out with Sports Radio 92.9 The Game today at 7 o'clock. Brewhouse Cafe, located in the heart of Little Five Points. It'll be the Atlanta United Columbus Crew Watch Party. I say we get some revenge on those jokers. We got NFL bounce coming up next. The latest from mini camps around the league on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and watch 92.9thegame.com.
Indeed it is, and we're going to falconize this NFL bounce because we're at Flowery Branch at Falcons headquarters, and doors open at 1:30. You can come out here. It's open to the public. It looks like the skies are going to hold up. Maybe until later today they'll open up a little bit, but I'm no weather person. But I do know football, and at 2:30 the practice will begin. Come on up here, and you can watch it. Now, John and I detailed 10 down to 1 our top quarterbacks in the NFL, really to find out where Matt Ryan would rank. I had Ryan at 6. John had Matt Ryan at 4. And, John, I'd like to do another list with you right now.
Okay.
Under this tent that says 92.9 The Game all over it. Mm-hmm. Josh Gordon of the Cleveland Browns said that the Browns, with Corey Coleman, Josh Gordon, and Jarvis Landry, have the best wide receiver core in the NFL. Okay. A, do you agree with him?
No.
Okay. So now we have a conversation.
You do?
No, I don't agree with him. I think that trio is really, really good, and I hope the cops get that guy or girl who has run afoul of the law or help whoever's in need right there. I don't know if you heard that siren or not. But, John, I have come up with the best wide receiver corps in the NFL.
Okay.
In terms of – I got a long list, and we got to narrow it down. In the AFC, it's the Chargers, the Broncos, the Raiders, the Steelers, the Browns, and the Texans. In the NFC, it's the Eagles, the Lions, the Vikings, our Falcons, the Cardinals, and the Rams. Now, are you looking through depth charts right now?
I am kind of perusing and looking around as well, just trying to write down some of the best two or three guys that I can think of right off the top of my head.
So the Chargers, in terms of their top three receivers, are going to run out Keenan Allen, Tyrell Williams, and Mike Williams, the second-year player out of Clemson. Denver has added to Sanders and Demaryius Thomas, Cortland Sutton, prized rookie. Oakland is my pick, John. They rock with Amari Cooper, Jordy Nelson, and Martavis Bryant. I think that's as good as it gets. Actually, I'm going to change that. I got them third. The Pittsburgh Steelers, John, have Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster and rookie James Washington. We mentioned who the Browns have. The Houston Texans go with Nuke Hopkins, Will Fuller, and then either like Bruce Ellington or rookie Kiki QT. So in the NFC, the Philadelphia Eagles are going with Alshon Jeffrey. They just picked up Mike Wallace as their third receiver, and they have Nelson Aguilar. It's a really good three. The Detroit Lions go with Marvin Jones, Golden Tate, and Kenny Golladay, who enters his second year. Minnesota added Kendall Wright to Diggs and Thielen. We know who our Falcons have. The Arizona Cardinals have Fitz, Christian, Larry Fitzgerald, Christian Kirk, and Bryce Butler, the touchdown maker from Dallas who then ever played. And then the Rams have a rock star trio of Brandon Cooks, Robert Woods, and Cooper Kupp. So as I break that down, John, who are you thinking is like 1, 2, and 3?
Boy, I still look at Pittsburgh. Antonio Brown, argue the best wide receiver in all of football. He is a difference maker. Juju Smith-Schuster showed a year ago that Martavis Bryant was a guy you didn't need to have on your team anymore because Smith-Schuster put up some monster numbers. And now you get the explosive James Washington in there, a guy out of Oklahoma State that put monster numbers up as well. And we know Ben will be a guy that will throw it down the field if nothing else. I look at Minnesota, Thielen and Diggs. Those two guys are rock stars at wide receiver. You mentioned Kendall Wright, but also Laquon Treadwell, if he could ever do what he's supposed to do as a high first-round pick. Cooper, Nelson, and Bryant out in Oakland. Give Derek Carr three guys to throw the football to. John Gruden said that he's going to try to showcase Amari Cooper a lot more. And then what we have here, when Julio shows up, Mohamed Sanu and Calvin Ridley, they got to be in the group as well with the Rams, with Kupp and Woods, and now you add Brandon Cooks.
So my top five is, and I want to thank Josh Gordon. I believe I might have said Jarvis Landry. Josh Gordon was the guy who said that the Cleveland Browns have the best trio of wide receivers in the NFL. And I will get shady for a minute here. Dude, you just got back in the league. You caught five balls last year. And now you're talking about you having the best wide receiver right. core in the NFL. And by the way, you're the Browns who won zero games last year. Mm-hmm. So please sit down. But Josh Gordon, thank you for creating a talking point here for Rick and John in our NFL Bounce Live from Flowery Branch. John, I agree with you. Number one is the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mm-hmm. The most important thing is Antonio Brown is a better receiver than Julio Jones. I don't think it's a debate. I don't think it's an argument. A lot of people do. And then, as you mentioned, you've got Juju and James Washington. I've got Atlanta number two. Julio Jones is 2 or 3 with Nuke Hopkins. And obviously, Mohamed Sanu is a solid number two, and Calvin Ridley is going to get busy as one of the best third receivers in the NFL. Number three, that Oakland crew that I talked about with Jordy Nelson being added to Amari Cooper, and they have Martavis Bryant, maybe the best third receiver in all of football. The L.A. Rams are number four for me, John, going Cooks and Woods and Kupp. That is an outstanding trio of wide receivers. And five, I've got the Philadelphia Eagles with Alshon Jeffrey and Nelson Aguilar. And I'm a Mike Wallace guy. A lot of people aren't. Mike Wallace is a third receiver. I think it's perfect. He can be a home run hitter. They don't need him to have monster games every week, but he is going to be one of those guys that is kind of annoying when you watch the Eagles. I think he's going to hit some home runs for them this year. That's my top five.
I would have the Steelers number one. I put Minnesota number two with the production of Thielen, Diggs. Obviously, you added Kendall Wright to that group. Laquon Treadwell, a first-round pick that hasn't lived up to expectations as of yet. Number three right here, Julio Sanu and Calvin Ridley. And I think they have the chance to jump to number one if Calvin Ridley can do what a lot of people are thinking that he can do. Number four for me would be the Rams. Brandon Cooks has quietly been an 1,100-yard guy for the last couple of years. You add him out there with Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp, who's a great slot receiver. I have them number four. And then number five would be the Raiders. I like Cooper. Jordy Nelson's been a star, although he's getting older, and now you add Martavis Bryant as a number three.
Wow, so the only difference that we have, you have Minnesota in yours.
At number two.
And you do not have Philadelphia in yours.
No.
Interesting. I think you're sleeping on Philly's wide receiver crew just a little bit. All right, let's talk some Falcons here. You mentioned Eric Saubert in the previous segment. On Falcons.com, it says, Saubert may not have done much last year, you think? It says, but the second-year tight end.
That's saying it very nicely.
It says, the second-year tight end jumped out at the start of minicamp. He made a number of solid catches, including an over-the-shoulder one-handed grab on the sideline. So that is encouraging to hear. And again, John, the fact that we weren't super aggressive at tight end in the offseason tells me that the Falcons feel like we got a third invested in Hooper, we got a fifth invested in Saubert, and we're going with these guys. Mm-hmm.
If Saubert can make a jump, remember, this is a guy that's going to fight to have a roster spot. It's not guaranteed.
Oh, I think it's guaranteed.
I don't.
I think it's guaranteed.
They've cut fifth-rounders before.
I will tell you, right. I don't make guarantees until today. Guarantee you Eric Saubert makes this football team unless he gets hurt.
I hope he does, and I hope that means he's actually not just here as a body that dresses on Sundays. I hope he's a guy that starts making plays. Now, you saw the catch yesterday. It looked like he got something done there. If he continues to do this, you'll be very happy about it with Eric Saubert. He's one of those guys from last year's draft class, like Duke Riley, like DeMonte Casey. They've got a lot to prove in year number two, because you make a team a lot of times because of where you're drafted and the potential they see. You start to get the year number two, they go, all right, how can you help us? That's what we need to know.
I like that you brought up Duke Riley. Duke Riley is a very key player for us. What did we do at linebacker in the offseason?
Not much.
Not much.
Yeah.
And the answer is Duke Riley.
Uh-huh.
You spent a second-round pick on this guy. Third-round pick or second-round pick in terms of Duke Riley? Second-round pick or third-round pick?
Remember, they traded back into the third round.
I always get that confused. Early third-round pick, though, correct?
Yes.
All right. Early third-round pick needs to be a ball player for your team, making plays. You need to hear Wes Durham saying his name. And so, to me, Duke Riley is one of the guys I look to as we need more from Duke Riley in 2018, and I presume we're going to get it because, John, his season was derailed with the injury that he suffered a year ago.
It was, and he never really could get comfortable. Remember, they're going to go a lot of nickel package. They're going to do a lot of those things. Duke Riley's got to earn spots on the field. They have to have a reason to put him out there. Remember, there was a lot of times, and I know it was injury-related, where Kamal Ishmael was getting time at the end of the year. I love Kamal. Great special teams guy. Solid, you know, when you plug him in for five plays. Remember, he starts the game against the Raiders, has like 15 tackles a couple of years ago. He's a gamer. I don't want Kamal Ishmael out there over somebody like Duke Riley that I invested a draft choice in if Duke Riley can play. Everything I've read this offseason, he's put in a ton of work. He's kind of following Debo around. They're trying to get him better. If he can make a next step, that's going to be huge for this defense.
I want to talk about this more in one more round at 120 because we're running out of time here in our NFL bounce. But we need to sink our teeth into Dan Quinn spending a bunch of time with the wide receivers yesterday. So Julio not here. Quinn, who, and by the way, this isn't like unusual. He'll spend like in various times, like a lot of time with the D-line, a lot of time with the tight ends. Like he'll go from position group to position group. But he focused on receivers and wanted them to work on getting their top speed and adjusting to the ball as well as throttling down and getting in and out of cuts. So that tells me that he was helping with the polishing of young Calvin Ridley.
It's the polish before the polish. You heard that earlier on, the shirt before the shirt, the polish before the polish. You love to see DQ as a hands-on head coach. How many head coaches in this league do you just see standing there with a whistle in the middle of the field facilitating? Dan's never been that way. He's a guy that'll go to different groups and he'll work with them. Yeah, I think there is a lot of that. But it's not just Calvin Ridley. Think about it. Marvin Hall's a young player in this league. You know,
Reggie Davis.
Reggie Davis is a young player in this league. These guys haven't got a lot of reps, and that's why mini camps like this are so important to players like that.
So what I want to ask at 120, DQ spending extra time coaching the wide receivers on the day that he finds out that Julio not reporting for mandatory minicamp. Coincidence or not?
Was he running routes? Was he wearing a number 11 jersey and running like dig routes from time to time? You got your trivia question over there?
Yes. Let me reach in my bag of tricks here and pull out the trivia question.
We're going to make it easy for Mark Owens back in the studio. Caller number 1-404-741-0929. We'll get a chance to win a Hawks draft pack that includes a $100 gift card to Stats, two tickets to the Hawks home opener, and an Atlanta Hawks swag bag. Don't forget Hawks draft viewing party Thursday the 21st, 6:30 p.m. at Stats. It's free and open to the public. Cheerleaders, flight crew, Harry the Hawk, and more are going to be there. You do have to download a ticket, though, even though it's free, Hawks.com/fan draft, but we're giving away this prize pack right now. Correct answer number one at 404-741-0929, Rick Kamla.
When was Dennis Schroeder drafted in the first round of the 2013 draft? When was Dennis Schroeder taken in the first round of the 2013 NBA draft?
2000, right before Cal Bowdler.
That is incorrect, my friend.
All right, we'll take caller number one next to win that. We do From the Bible with the Preacher Man live here from Flowery Branch on 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com.
All righty then, it's the Preacher Man's time to shine, and the sun is, well, not really shining. But anyway, we're at Flowery Branch out here at Falcons headquarters. Doors are going to be open to the public at 1:30, the practice at 2:30, and a huge, gigantic, with love shout-out to the great Tasha,
yes,
who just stopped by here and dropped on us caramel popcorn, cotton candy,
Lemon pepper Falcon, skins.
Lemon pepper skins. Yummy. Falcon-colored popcorn. Mm-hmm. And when I'm off the air here, I'm going to eat a lot of this, and hopefully some of it's left for my boys when I get home.
All homemade. You could check out her store, Always Sweet, on Covington Highway in Lithonia. So if you're over on the east side of town, swing on over there. I cannot wait to pop some of this open and get to it. Preacher Man didn't want to gum up his mouth, so he isn't eating quite yet. But at the end of this segment, we've probably lost Preacher Man for the rest of the day.
Yeah, pretty much. That's probably factually accurate. All right, so apparently Greg Hardy made one heck of an impression on Dana White, knocking out his opponent in 57 seconds into his UFC Contender Series fight. Hardy was matched up against former NFL lineman Austin Lane on Tuesday night. And the winner will get the opportunity to earn a UFC contract if White feels like the fighter has earned it. Apparently, Hardy was undefeated in his previous three fights in the octagon, while Lane himself was 2-0 with two KOs in his previous fight. So it all went down.
So he's going to get a chance potentially to fight in UFC. There's so many inappropriate things you can say about this, so I'm not going to. I will just say this. If you want to do us all a favor, Dana White, put Greg Hardy against CM Punk so we can beat CM Punk back to the WWE. Like, one last time, let's get CM Punk. I want to hear Cult of Personality drop CM Punk, come out, the arena go bananas, and he's back in the WWE.
Is that his entrance music?
Yeah.
He changed. It used to be some other WWE producer, and then he went to Cult of Personality. It was really awesome.
It's a great song. It's one of the great rock songs of the last, I don't know, 30 years. This doesn't surprise me at all. I actually thought that Greg... I mean, Greg Hardy's a lunatic, right? I mean, he has done very nefarious stuff,
yeah.
Very bad things. It does not surprise me that he can pummel huge, gigantic fighters into submission. That does not surprise me at all. I'm going to have a hard time cheering for the guy, but it's an interesting story to follow.
All right, well, we talked about the Warriors' victory celebration in the locker room, right?
So awesome.
$400,000 uh-huh. worth of alcohol. Well, on the buses, they had $500,000 worth of booze.
So then help me out with something. Because Jordan Bell
ran out
of his bottle of Hennessy and got off the bus, went into the crowd. One of the Warriors fans gave him a bottle of Hennessy, and he's literally chugging Hennessy as if we just did a workout and you were thirsty and you're chugging water. Dude just raised the bottle and just glug, 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 glug. It's what happens when you win, baby.
The last time I've seen somebody chug Hennessy that way, my boy Rel, who you met down in Houston, we were in the Dominican, and he had one of those I'm going for it days, which meant he was passed out underneath a chair at a day party at some point, and we had to carry him back to his room because in 95-degree Dominican weather, straight bottle of the Hennessy White, just bloop, 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 bloop. Guzzling it up, straight hot, no problem. I'm just mad that Jordan Bell had that little shot glass of Hennessy up on. Like, bring a big bottle. It's a big parade. You just won a championship.
Well, what is he? He's a rookie, right?
He's a rookie.
So rookies get, you know, less of the take.
Ah,
so
good
to
call.
Speak.
Good
they
call.
Had $500,000 worth of booze.
Maybe not on his bus.
Maybe.
You know, the big boys get all the, you know, the name brand. You get the little, you get what's left over. That's what I'm saying.
Who was funnier, him going into the crowd to get Hennessy or Swaggy P basically in some draws walking around head, like high-fiving and headbutting
Was that a
people.
Bathrobe he had on?
I think he did.
It was. He went into one of the playoff games wearing that robe just because he's Nick Young. Jordan Bell also grabbed a broom and was like sweeping the street out there in the Bay Area. I give the award to Jordan Bell. I thought he was great.
Well, nice. And if they would have boxed out at Oregon, maybe he would have won a national title and won a championship back there. Yeah, it was a little shady.
Oh, why you got to get shady with my
Actually,
guy?
Actually, no, they would have lost to Gonzaga in the championship, and I would have won the pool. So, the heck with you guys, Oregon.
I remember back when Reggie Bush actually played football.
Yeah.
What, at USC?
I'm so glad you have this story, Preacher Man. I'm so
no,
glad.
No. Remember when he was playing in St. Louis inside the dome and he got pushed out of bounds and slipped?
Yep.
Well, he's been awarded $12.5 million for his first said injury, yes. Last week, the trial started. The jury awarded Reggie a massive payout. He is set to get $4.95 million in compensatory damages, money he was given to cover lost earnings, and also $7.5 million in punitive damages.
Wow.
Good for you, Reggie.
So I know a come-up now. If I can just get shoved on the sideline and injure myself, and Lord knows, I am prone to injury.
It wouldn't take much for you.
I know. The precedent set, $12.5 million. I don't know that the punitive damages for a sideline reporter are quite the same. I just want a jersey and, like, some season tickets. That's all I need.
So I'm watching that game live. and I see Reggie Bush go out of bounds, and he's trying to slow himself down,
yep.
and he gets to the little area right up against the wall where right. then the seats begin, and it was like slick.
It's concrete.
And he went, whoop, and he completely slipped, screwed up his leg. I forget the injury that he suffered. Was it a torn ACL?
Yeah, let me find it real quick. It was
called a torn Kardashian.
But
he tore his lateral meniscus.
Uh-huh. Okay, and that's a big deal, man. Meniscus is your brake pads, and for an older player, I knew his career was done at that point. He was really kind of out of gas anyway. And so, to be honest with you, that's the best thing that ever happened to Reggie Bush. He was basically out of gas, gets injured by the fault of the stadium, and now, as you said, $5 million plus the punitive damages of $7 million. I'm not like a huge Reggie Bush guy. I just feel good for the guy. This is what should have happened.
I think there's a lot of USC fans that aren't huge Reggie Bush guys either, but it's a different question for a different day.
If I were a USC fan, I'd be a Reggie Bush fan. I'd be mad at the NCAA for their stupid, archaic rules.
Well, no, I'd be mad at Reggie for not just paying the guy the money and shutting the blank up. You know what I'm saying? Because nothing would have happened. Just paid a man his money. You could afford it.
Yeah.
You chose not to, and that's what caused the whole.
And I've said that Jamie Dukes told us that Reggie Bush had the lid blown off the whole thing because he took money from an agent. The agent, and he didn't go with the agent.
Right.
The agent wanted the money back, and Reggie Bush didn't give him the money back, so the agent blew the whistle on him. So you're right. It does go back to Reggie.
It goes back to Reggie. Just pay the guy's money, and everything would have been fine. All right, well, you know, Shaquille O'Neal, Shaq and a Fool on TNT. He is giving out his award for the 2017-2018 season, and the winner is?
Let me guess.
JaVale McGee.
Nah, because there's like a moratorium on ripping JaVale McGee because of his mom. Oh, God. Oh, man. I'm J.R. Smith.
No. John?
I'm trying to think who had some stupid things all year. I have no clue.
Joel Embiid is the winner.
Really? Joel Embiid. What did he do?
It says that he reminds us with all the greatness often comes with great bloopers, and so Embiid, who had just a few embarrassing moments this year, is the program's MVP.
Interesting. Okay. You know what I love most about Joel Embiid is the beef between him and Russell Westbrook.
Uh-huh.
Does that not entertain the heck out of you guys? You got the point guard with the most dog in him. Well, hold on a second. Isaiah Thomas, to me, had the most dog in him at point guard of anybody. But the Russell Westbrook-Joel Embiid feud is priceless.
Speedy Claxton, NBA legend, didn't have the most dog in him. No. He had the most clean suits on the Hawks sideline, and I can tell you that
boy,
much.
That is blasphemous to put Speedy and legend in the same sentence.
A guy that tried out for this show that actually called Speedy Claxton a Hawks legend, NBA legend.
My favorite player of all time, Magic Johnson, he had a lot of dog in him, too.
He did. He had a lot of other things in him, too.
Uh-oh.
He actually did have a lot of dog in him, just not the dog you're talking about.
Paul, what else you got here from the Bible? Live from Flowery Branch.
I'm not sure if we're out of time yet or not. Mark Owens has not gotten in my ear. I was waiting for him to yell at me. Yes, we were out of time, according to Mark Owens. So this today's Mark research material, it's Wednesday, right?
It is Wednesday.
Hump day,
yeah. So my boom booty is the research material for today.
My boom?
Yes.
Booty.
That's correct.
That needs to be a song.
I don't know. It might be a song. I don't know.
I found you, my boom booty.
Ooh, look at Mark Owens ripping off a little cult of personality. I like it a lot.
From Chicago, Illinois, CM Punk. We take a break. We come back. We go from CM Punk to Jason Longshore and his Kango in Columbus. Next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, live from Flowery Branch.
And we come to you live from Flowery Branch. Get up here. Come on. 85 North, 985 Flowery Branch. All signs point to Flowery Branch. So come on up here, man. Doors open at 1:30, and the practice will get underway at 2:30. And, of course, tonight at 7:30, it is Atlanta United at the Columbus Crew. And we need a win. We need 3 points, and we need to get a little revenge against Columbus, who knocked us out of the postseason a year ago. We have Jason Longshore on the WadeFord.com hotline, radio analyst for Atlanta United. And Jason, very simply, is Miguel Almirón going to play in this match tonight or not?
It's going to be a game-time decision, guys. He made the trip. He is here in Columbus, and we'll have to see if that shoulder is going to allow him to go tonight after a pretty quick turnaround from New York.
Jason, what would be a reason to keep him out? And if he is out tonight, who ends up getting the start for Miggy?
It's just a pain threshold thing. You know, it doesn't look like it's anything where he can do more structural damage, but as physical as the game can be centrally where Miguel plays, you're going to be taking hits on that shoulder consistently. So can he play his normal game with the shoulder bothering him? It looked like it was bothering him in New York in the first half. He didn't look like himself. So it's just going to be where that pain threshold is. If he doesn't go, you have a couple different options. Kevin Kratz can slot in there as the 10, be a little more defensively minded against a really good Columbus attack. You could go with two forwards like we saw in the second half, and that might have been, you know, kind of your preview of it with Romario Williams and Joseph Martinez up top and first Ezekiel Barco playing the number 10. I think Barco later in his career will be a number 10, a playmaker centrally. He's still kind of growing into that role, and I'm not sure if Tata Martino is going to be ready to hand him the keys just yet.
Interesting. Jason Longshore and Rick and John here at Flowery Branch breaking down tonight's match and, you know, whether Miggy Almiron is going to play or not. You mentioned, wouldn't do more structural damage. Do we know what's wrong? Is it an AC joint sprain? Is it, you know, a compromised labrum? Like, I mean, do we know exactly what's up, Jason, or do we only know that it's a sore shoulder or just a shoulder injury?
It's the latter. All we know at this point is that it's a shoulder injury. So Tata Martino was pretty clear after the match on Saturday, not thinking it would be, you know, a long-term injury. And the fact that he made the trip, you know, is a really promising sign. So whether you see him start, maybe you see him come off the bench. Maybe if he doesn't have 90 minutes in him, you can bring him in the second half and run at a Columbus team that has been playing a number of games here lately. They went to extra time in the Open Cup last Wednesday and lost on penalties, and they had a really tough match on Saturday against the New York Red Bulls, a team that presses and can wear you down. So the idea of bringing on Miguel Almiron at about the 60-minute mark is kind of exciting to me.
All right, Jason, I'm a revenge guy, and Atlanta United needs some revenge on this stinking crew out of that awful city in Columbus, Ohio. Columbus, a team right now that is tops in the league defensively. Atlanta United, the best scoring team in MLS. I've called it the immovable object against the irresistible force, like I was Gorilla Monsoon back in the old WWF days. What does Atlanta United have to do to break down the Columbus defense?
Well, there won't be any steel chairs involved, so we're not going to be able to get away with that one tonight. look back at last year. You know, look at what Atlanta did to Columbus in the regular season last year. Pretty dominant win at Bobby Dodd Stadium. And then what I look at is the win here in Columbus last year that was a 2-0 victory, and it was all about speed, and it was all about exploiting mistakes in Columbus's back line. Their back line has improved. Jonathan Mensah really struggled early last year as a big-money signing, but he settled in, and he's much more sure of himself this year. But he's starting next to a second-year pro, Lalas Abubakar. Two guys who, when you press them, they will make some turnovers and they will give you some opportunities. So Joseph Martinez, if it's Miguel Almiron, if it's maybe Tito Villalba getting back into the lineup, he made the trip as well. Barco, speed will be a huge opportunity for Atlanta to exploit Columbus tonight.
You're going to hear Jason Longshore and Mike Conti live from Columbus tonight right here on the home of Atlanta United, Sports Radio 92.9. The game pregame at 7 and the kick from Columbus at 7:30. Now, Jason, you just mentioned Villalba. That was going to be my next question. And we know that he is dinged up as well. Who's more – and so give us some details on what you know about his injury. And who do you think is more likely to suit up tonight or play tonight, Villalba or Almiron?
I think they both are fairly likely to play. I think Tito might get more time. You know, he's been getting closer and closer, making trips and being out on the road with the guys. He had a hyperextended knee. And, you know, if you've ever had that, it's really unpredictable how everything is going to recover because you're not doing any damage. It's just sore. It's like a bad sprain. So it just depends on how long you bounce back. And for a speed guy like Tito, you know, it's all about comfort. Last year in Columbus, he scored both goals, and it was pure speed. One over the top that he just outran the whole Columbus back line. The other, a great finish in the box. It's easy to forget how important Tito Villalba was to this team last year. Double-digit goals, double-digit assists, one of the few players in MLS to do that. And it's even more impressive what Atlanta United has done in 2018 with Tito Villalba barely playing a role in that.
Jason, we'll get back to Atlanta United for a moment, but I want to get to our World Cup draw draft yesterday. I felt there were shenanigans involved with me having the number one pick. How the heck is Switzerland in there? When I looked at world rankings, they were not in the top eight, and they got stuck, to me, with the number one pick. I got the worst team out of Pool 1. Why was Switzerland in Pool 1?
They were number six in the FIFA rankings. They were, you know, a top team according to FIFA. Hey, at this point, I would trade you. I don't know if you guys saw the news overnight. I had Spain as my pick. That's who I drew out of the bucket. They fired their manager already. On the eve of the World Cup, they play Friday. They fired their manager.
Well, Jason, what the heck's going on with that? Like, I know that European soccer tends to be, like, super passionate and emotional and intense and, you know, hell be damned, you know, off with your head and all that kind of stuff, man. Like, I get the fire and brimstone, but, like, this does not seem like a move that sets Spain up for success in the World Cup.
No, not really. This is kind of a crazy political situation with the Spanish game, because you had the manager announce, well, you had his club, his future employer, Real Madrid, announce that he was taking over after the World Cup. And the president of the Spanish Federation reportedly did not know that was going to happen until 5 minutes before the announcement. And you have Real Madrid and you have Barcelona, and both have a lot of influence in Spain. And there was some talk out of Spain that Barcelona was pretty unhappy that the manager of the national team with a lot of Barcelona players is going to Real Madrid in a month. And there was a lot of pressure. He also had a new federation president who wanted to make his mark, and he did. I just wonder if he sabotaged their promising World Cup run, because Spain, for a lot of people, is a favorite.
Jason, who else would you have as a favorite if Spain now might be going through some turmoil? Out of all the groups, and we had eight of us, and it's up on the Facebook page, Stoppage Time, who would you have as a favorite out of us to win this little pool that we've got going?
I don't know everybody's off the top of my head, but there's two elements to it. So if you have the winner of the World Cup, okay, that's one winner of our pool. The other is your four teams' combined total points throughout the tournament. So you want teams to advance and stay in it as long as they can. In that regard, I felt pretty good about my group, except for now Spain is in disarray and they play Portugal, who is the defending European champions, on Friday. Other than that, you know, some teams to look for. I like some of the dark horses like England and Colombia. Colombia is the one that I keep kind of going back to that can make some noise here. And this England team, usually England comes in with a lot of expectations, a lot of pressure. This is a young group, and I was not quite that happy to be here type of thing, but they haven't dealt with the type of pressure that the English tabloids will put on you yet. And they're pretty loose. I think this is a talented team, and you've got a goal scorer in Harry Kane who, if he gets hot, in a World Cup, if you have a hot goal scorer and or a hot goalkeeper, you can do some damage.
So Jason Longshore joining us here talking soccer, specifically Atlanta United. So let me reel it back into the United States here for just a moment. We know that no members of Atlanta United are on any of the World Cup teams, but has the Columbus Crew lost a player or two or three to the World Cup? Please tell me yes.
No. They'll have everybody back in the fold tonight. They had two players with the U.S. national team playing some friendlies over the weekend in France, Will Trapp and Zach Steffen. But they're back with the team. They've trained. We'll see if they're 90 minutes ready. I would expect Steffen, the goalkeeper, would be. Trapp, as a defensive midfielder, he's the fulcrum for Columbus's possession game, and they're one of the best teams in regards to possession in the league. They're going to want him on the field, but, you know, playing 90 minutes in France on Saturday, flying across the ocean, playing here Wednesday, how much is he really going to have to give tonight? That's a big question for me, looking at how this game's going to go.
You guys spent a lot of time talking about the field at Yankee Stadium, how condensed it was, how difficult it was for Atlanta United. Let's be honest, they got fortunate to get out of there with a 1-1 draw. Is the field different at Columbus? Can Atlanta operate the way they like to?
Yeah, they can. It's a beautiful field in Columbus. The one thing that will be different is, you know, as you guys have heard, Columbus is going through some possible relocation talks of the club. They might be headed to Austin, Texas. That is you know, their ownership group is exploring that option. And while they say they're exploring a parallel path to stay in Columbus, they're not really looking like they're going too far down that path. So the fan base is not very energized at the moment, understandably. A Wednesday night in Columbus, I'm not expecting a huge crowd. I think it's going to be one of those, like Atlanta talked about at Gillette Stadium in New England, where they're going to have to kind of manufacture their own energy here, because you're not going to have a huge crowd to feed off of.
I mean, and that, boy, was that, you know, that was one of those draws that you felt like you had to get three out of it. Saturday was one of the draws where I was happy that we kept them from getting three. That was just a crazy match, Jason. Jason Longshore joining Rick and John here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I want to talk about how lucky we were in that match. And by the way, we had luck coming to us getting Geigered in back-to-back games. But we had luck coming to us. But to me, when LGP took that guy out right outside the box, and the guy lands in the box, and the ref raises the yellow card, and I'm like, oh, God, here comes the PK. You know, and obviously it's usually a goal. And I was so gripping for a PK right there. And they said, no, the foul was out of the box, and they gave him a free kick, and obviously we stopped it. But it talked to me about the in and out of the box thing and how perilous that was for our Atlanta United when LGP did that.
Yeah, it was really close. And Leandro knows his positioning on the field pretty well. He was in a spot where if he doesn't make that play, if he doesn't try to make a tackle there, Tajori Shradi's in on goal. So you have to go for it. You know you're outside the box. You know you've got a little bit of wiggle room, so you can make the attempt at it. If you don't get the ball, you have to get the player there, and you have to prevent him from getting in on goal. LGP did enough to do that. But the big picture about Saturday is NYCFC was a very motivated team to send their manager out on a high. Patrick Vieira announced this week that he's leaving NYCFC. He's headed to Nice in France. He's a former French international, one of the all-time greats for the French national team. And he's, you know, making the next jump in his managerial career. The players loved playing for him. And you could see just a noticeable, you know, boost. When they did go down 1-0 early in the second half, they did not want Vieira to go out that way. And they all knew that was his last game at Yankee Stadium. And they fought and threw everything forward to get a result. It's a very impressive draw for Atlanta United against the team with the quality of NYCFC and the motivation that they had on Saturday.
So, Jason, are you singing happy birthday to Mike Conte tonight, or do you guys have any plans? Like, are you guys going to do Jaeger bombs at some point during halftime of the broadcast?
not doing that during halftime, for sure. There is a possibility after the game. Actually, this is kind of an interesting one because I'm filling in for Dan Gargan on the TV side tonight. Dan just welcomed his third child into the world, so I'm coming off the bench on the TV side, and I'm going to have to catch up with Mike in the post game.
Wow, so three children for Dan. Buckle up. All I can say is you used to be able to play man-to-man defense. Now you got to go to a zone defense, him and wifey going to three kids. I hope you and Mike Conte just have a great time there in Columbus. Conte rocking solo call on Atlanta United tonight. Jason, really appreciate the time, man. Get us 3 points, and we'll talk to you soon.
We'll talk soon, guys.
All right, and we want you to join us this Friday at Twin Peaks and Buckhead from 10 to 2. We broadcast live. Again, Twin Peaks and Buckhead, you know what goes on there. We have fun. There's incredible food and the best servers in town. Twin Peaks and Buckhead with your boys 10 to 2 on Friday.
Hey, we've got one more round coming up next. We'll hear more from minicamp as gates are about to open up. We're live here at Flowery Branch on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com.
All right, and one more round today comes from Flowery Branch, y'all. And we're at Falcons training camp, obviously. Not training camp, mini camp. Training camp comes in about a month. But mini camp, it's day two today. It's open to the public, 2:30 practice. The doors open, oh, I don't know, John, what, 8 minutes from now?
Yeah, about 8 minutes.
Yeah, exactly, 8 minutes.
I see people coming down whatever road this is, Falcons Drive, and there's lining up over there at the gate.
I think it's Falcons Parkway, isn't it?
Sure, whatever you say.
Falcons Parkway.
That's Hog Mountain Road right now. I know that much.
Why you got to call me a hog, man? We got Mike Thomas from CW69 here, and obviously a great photographer. And I would call him he's like a chronicler if that's even a word, for our Atlanta Falcons. And
Snoop Dogg is a chronicist.
There you go.
He's a chronic coolist.
And Mike Thomas is a total metalhead, so you know he's my homie, man. Shout out to Mike.
Yeah, let's just say when we travel on the road and Mike and Bo and I like to have a good time out on the road, I'm usually in the minority when it comes to music. I'm like, hey, let's go to the EDM spot. They're like, no. All right, we'll go to the Hard Rock spot. I'll make it work. Tito's and Red Bull. After about three Tito's and Red Bull, I don't hear the music anyway. It doesn't matter. The great thing is we're already, like, the season doesn't get started for, what, another 2-3 months? Mike was like, last game of the year in Tampa, my birthday. Hopefully they flex it to a 4 o'clock game, because that's what I said. Blue Martini's gone, though. No, there's a Mexican spot there. Remember, Bo? Oh, they moved it. Blue Martini's a great spot in Tampa.
I've been to the Blue Martini in Orlando. It's outstanding.
It's a great spot. I just had to go.
Caliente all around.
I told you, have to buy a new shirt when I'm here, but this one's not for me. Kane's getting the brand new Falcons T-shirt. The good thing is I don't have to buy it for the rest of the family because they all –
They like that other team, don't they?
They like a really bad team in the NFC South.
That rhymes with ain'ts.
Yeah, so it saves me money. I come up here, I take care of Kane and I, and that's it. The rest of them, you'll get a T-shirt somewhere else.
I ain't going to Saints minicamp, John.
Hell no.
I'm going to play the Julio card on Saints minicamp.
Where is Saints minicamp? Like, in the middle of Lake Pontchartrain?
Who knows? It's in the French Quarter somewhere. I don't know. Drew Brees trying to warm up that old geezer arm of his, man.
Isn't there a Poydras there somewhere?
There's an
Opelousas?
Oh, Poydras is like, I think, the main drag.
Oh, that's a street. Yeah. Maybe they have camp on Poydras. I don't know.
They might. That'd be a little dicey, though. But what that would be is catching balls on concrete like I just did earlier. John threw a beautiful over-the-shoulder ball to me, a little corner route into the corner of the end zone here. We don't have an end zone. It's just concrete.
And, yeah, you just didn't want to go into the VIP area.
And I, your boy made the catch. I lost my footing a little bit and then lost control of the ball, regained control of the ball while going down to the concrete and trying to make sure that my $150 Ray-Bans don't explode. So I saved the Ray-Bans, made the catch, and everybody was happy.
I was happy that you made the catch and didn't get injured. I was a little upset that you spiked my football that I told Bo not to drop because it's the ball we use in flag football. So our quarterback, Scott, he's going to pick it up and go, what the hell is this scuff mark?
There's
on
no scuffs on it, though.
Hey, you spiked that like you were Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah, I did. I gave you the Gronk spike. Gronk spike ball.
Either way, we are out here at minicamp. Practice will get underway at 2:30 today as they continue open to the public. So if you got a chance, take a half day. Get on up here. Come on out, say hi. V103 is right next to us. We're obviously right here. Dukes and Bell broadcast live from 2 to 7. Hugh Douglas is about to high-five people. He will also do bro hugs a little bit later on. What do you look for in a mini camp, though, like this today, Rick?
I want to look at the young guys. We've been watching these Falcons every play of every game for all these years, and we know what Matt can do. We know what Matthews can do. We know what Keanu Neal can do. We know what Matty Ice can do. I'm looking at the young guys, and especially – like the Calvin Ridley-Matt Ryan relationship, and, you know, where is he throwing to him? Are they deep balls? Is he lining up in the slot? Is he lining up outside? It's really about the young guys, John.
It is, and it's about, for me, staying healthy. I know people always ask, well, how did Deidre and Sanat look? Well, they don't have pads on, so I'm not really going to get into what he's doing. What you look for is for guys like that to learn technique. Got a chance to talk to Grady Jarrett very briefly at his golf tournament, and he said, you know, Deidre Sanat's a sponge. He's a guy that's really wanting to get after it. And, again, I encourage anybody that has not read the article about Deidre Sanat, his upbringing, his life, all that good stuff, to do so right now. Deidre Sanat's a guy that his way out was football, and I know that's a story for a lot of different people, but he went through a ton, and he's obviously wanting to get stuff done now, and he gets his chance here. He's going to get a chance to get a lot of snaps here in this defense.
There's no question about that, John, and I definitely want to talk Braves here in a minute. Soroka is dealing. The Braves are up 1-0 over the Mets, bottom of the sixth inning at SunTrust Park. But, John, Dan Quinn yesterday spent a lot of his time specifically with the wide receiver group.
Right.
And I just don't think it's a coincidence. If Julio Jones is there, and we've heard a lot of – Julio has said, yo, I like teaching the young guys. Quinn and everybody and Sarkisian talk about, you know, Julio's great with the young guys and bringing them along, kind of like Roddy White did to Julio. Now Julio is passing that knowledge on. Well, Julio isn't here. And so that, to me, is not a coincidence. Mm-hmm. I think if Julio were here, Dan Quinn might be focusing on another position group that he feels just needs some tweaking and some wrench turning. But he's looking at those wide receivers like, yo, they need me. They need some of my wisdom. Do you agree?
To a point, yes. I do think Dan's a very hands-on coach, and he's got a location right now at wide receiver where he doesn't have his number one guy. Sanu obviously can teach this offense, but I also talked about Calvin Ridley being there, and now you've got young players being out there as well. No longer is Taylor Gabriel there, so you know Justin Hardy is he's the most elder statesman on this team as far as longevity on this team. So you got Mo Sanu, you've got Justin Hardy, and you've got a bunch of young guys. So you can see why DQ is over there trying to coach him up.
I also want to talk with you about, and this is another sort of non-Julio angle, Quinn, it says here on Falcons.com, wasn't the only person spending a portion of his time with the receivers. Cornerback Desmond Trufant was working with Mohamed Sanu, catching passes from the quarterbacks early in practice. And Quinn explained it's to help Trufant work on making difficult catches that he might have to make during a game.
Yes.
And, John, does this not go back to what Quinn always preaches? It's all about the ball.
Ball, battle, brotherhood. Something along those lines. I know those are three that they always are screaming out. But for Dez, we talked about a couple of weeks ago, what do you have to do to get Desmond Trufant to become a better corner? It's called getting turnovers. And I know interceptions aren't the be-all, end-all at defensive back. There's a lot of times passer rating against, and A.J. Boye had a great passer rating against last year. That's fine. This team has to do better than -2 turnover ratio, and it could start with two guys that you're paying big money for to play defensive back. Robert Alford, who I thought his game improved a year ago, he looked like a number one-like cornerback. And Desmond Trufant, who coming off an injury, did not play that well. I'd love to see Des come up with 4 or 5 picks this year and really elevate his game.
He's got to, man. And Mike Soroka is dealing today. Jacob DeGrom is as well. DeGrom has pitched 6 innings, 6 Ks, 5 hits, 1 earned run allowed. Now, in terms of Mike Soroka, John, all I can say is we might be onto something special today.
Yeah.
Okay?
Oh, because, really?
Yes. Now, the key is he's made it through 6 innings.
See?
He's made it through 6 innings and has pitched 65 pitches.
Ooh.
Grant told us earlier he thought 85 to 90 would be the pitch count for Soroka.
Unless something special is happening.
But you've got a young guy at 20 coming off an injury. He's made 2 rehab starts. We've already seen earlier this year that when a guy, it was Nathan Eovaldi, just off the disabled list, had something special cooking, and they had to pull him out because they didn't want him getting re-injured. So I think that our team will play the we got to take care of Soroka card over leaving him in there for the sake of history. And if we got to dance around it here because I don't want to be called a jinx, okay? But Soroka right now has something special brewing at SunTrust Park.
Either way, it's a shutout scenario, so it is something special, bro, and it's nice to see him come off the DL and pitch the way that he is pitching. Jacob DeGrom dealing as well. As you mentioned, Dansby Swanson with an RBI driving in Freddie Freeman for the only run in that game. Jacob DeGrom soon to be New York Yankee. Just putting that out, that's going to happen.
Jacob DeGrom to the Yankees.
Yeah.
He wouldn't even have to, like, move.
No.
He wouldn't even have to change apartments.
Commute
or
would change a little bit. Maybe they make him cut. I'm just saying, that's my prediction. Put him right at number one with Luis Severino. Actually, he'd be number two behind.
You're killing me. I mean, I don't disagree. Trust me, I don't disagree because the Yankees need another bad bleep arm in their starting rotation. They do. And thank you, CC Sabathia, as we continue one more round. First of all, I had him in my lineup last night in my other fantasy baseball league. And CC Sabathia mowed down the Nationals. And really, he's the reason why we're a game up in the National League East right now.
Bryce Harper had to leave the game yesterday. He is scuffling.
Aww.
I know he's got 19
homers.
Boy, that
breaks my heart.
He's hitting under .230 still. We're in June.
Here's the problem. You've missed Rendon. He's back. You've missed Zimmerman. You've missed Daniel Murphy, who they just activated.
Right.
Like, this awesome Washington Nationals lineup that is one of the top 5 in baseball has not been there all year.
Right.
So Harper's been kind of a man on an island, not unlike Freddie Freeman a year ago.
Yeah, he is. And, again, that's a him problem. They're talking about he wants $500 million.
Yeah, he's not worth that.
Nobody's worth that.
He's not worth that. He's worth a good $30 million a year if Giancarlo Stanton is worth. Isn't that what Giancarlo's at?
Stanton
about 30
got $350 million over 10 years, I believe.
So he's at $35 million a year.
Somewhere in there.
So, I mean, and look, at Ryan averages $150 million 5 years. I know it's complicated, but essentially $30 million a year. So I have no problem with Bryce Harper being a $30 million per year guy, but a half a billion dollars, sit the bleep down somewhere. I've a lot of bleeps in this segment.
25 years old, Bryce Harper. It's amazing to think that this guy has actually lived up to the hype of when he was a 16-year-old.
He sure has. He definitely has. So has Strasburg.
Oh, yeah.
Being the number one pick, and he's lived up to it. But that dude always gets hurt at the wrong time, doesn't he?
Seems like everybody for Washington always gets hurt.
It's always something with that team. It's always something with that team.
As we like to say, that's a them problem, not so much an us problem. Well,
how about Soroka, dude?
Yeah, doing his thing.
Come on, man. Let's go.
Of course, he's on the bench in my other league.
Graham McCauley is starting him against me today.
Good.
In his fantasy
good.
Baseball league.
You have beefed up on all the poor teams in the league. Well, I lost all the bad teams in the league.
You can keep sleeping on my team. Go ahead.
I'm not worried about it.
Go ahead.
Come playoffs. We'll see if you got the Romo gene in the playoffs like you did last year.
Are you kidding me? Wow, we're out of time in this segment, man.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.